What I want to do is, is take this the usual way. We found that, you know, the best way to introduce this stuff is start off talking about things that people already know. So I'm going to start off, putting this in context of Java EE5. So really, Java EE5, I think, is this absolutely wonderful thing for the community of people who build applications, right? San and various other people really sat down and focused on the question of ease of development and on the question of making things good for developers. And there's two particular pieces of EE5 which I want to call out as, particularly important in that context. The first one is JSF. Now, JSF has, various kinds of criticism online, and some of that's fair and some of it's unfair. All I'm really going to say in response, to the criticism of JSF is that I've never seen a web framework that I didn't hate, and JSF I don't hate. So it's the first one that's been like that for me. So what does it actually provide? So first of all, it provides a component model for widgets, for controls, which can be embedded in some kind of templating language. Obviously, the one that a lot of people started out using JSF with was the templating language was JSP. Now, as we all know, by now, if not like 5 years ago, JSP is a steaming pile of doo-doo, and we should never, ever, ever use it for anything anymore. So what we should be using is a project called Facelets, which is something that actually makes JSF good to use. So Facelets is a nice templating templating language that's basically lets you write templates as pure XHTML. second thing that JSF provides is some kind of component model for application logic. So there's these two component models. There's one over here on this other side for the controls, the view, and then there's one for your application, right? So this is the so-called managed beam component model. And I mean, this is not very, complex. It's basically, Java beans with some kind of XML deployment descriptor. As far as it goes, it's okay. It doesn't provide much functionality. To me, it's lacking any kind of knowledge of, how you would go about accessing transactional resources like databases. There's one thing which I really, really do like about it, and that's that it's a contextual component model, right? Components in JSF, your managed beans, your application components, are bound to a context and they hold state in that context. And that's a really, really, really good idea. So where the real value of JSF is in the fact that it defines a very strong interaction model between the two component models, okay? So you can define, using an expression language, a very strong binding between widgets, between controls on the screen, and attributes on your components. And that's very powerful, and it's much more elegant and much more powerful than, we've seen in traditional action-based frameworks, things along the lines of, Strat's WebWorks, something like that. In addition to that, it has, it goes, but, kind of steps back away from, this so-called web MVC idea, abomination MVC, right? This coarse-grained action model, this very coarse-grained eventing model where the constructs that you're exposed to as a developer are the action, the web HTTP request response lifecycle. That's a very fragile construct. It's a construct that causes your code to be highly coupled, right? And it makes it very difficult to write loosely coupled components. And so JSF steps back towards the, true MVC, I'm like this old school small talk guy, not really, I just pretend I am, but I did do a little bit of small talk and actually know what MVC really was when it was designed. The whole concept of this is this, fine-grained eventing model, right? So JSF's able to take that fine-grained eventing model and map it back over the, transparently over the coarse-grained request response lifecycle. JSF's got a whole bunch of other stuff that you would expect to find in web frameworks, validators and, and the only other thing I'll call out, explicitly is these XML-based navigation rules, which is just a strutsy kind of a thing, I'm here on this page and this is some string-valued outcome and that means I go to this other page and it's really, pretty basic. I really don't like the fact that my slides are so blurry. Is there anything we can do about that? Second piece of Java EE5 that's great, you know, of course I'd say that, is EJB 3.0. So EJB, you know, is and was and has always been a component model for transactional components, for components which access transactional resources. That's the core value of EJB. You know, the core value is not that it's a distributed object model. I've heard that all the time. No. It's never been what it's used for. It's a component model for access to databases, for access to JMS queues, for this kind of stuff. So EJB provides, you know, a bunch of, you know, quite sophisticated functionality, you know, declarative transaction and you know, demarcation for the database level JTA atomic transactions. And then it realizes that, well, hey, there's this whole other thing. I mean, you know, online applications never work by atomic pessimistic transactions. They actually work by optimistic transactions. So it realizes that that we need a construct for dealing with optimistic transaction, so it has, you know, this idea of an extended persistence context and extended persistence context management, and that's powerful. You know, obviously the most important kind of transactional resource is a relational database, and so, you know, any component model which is there for dealing with, you know, transactional code has to have a very, you know, sophisticated ORM solution. So obviously, you know, JPA provides that. And all this stuff is based around this, you know, this annotation-based programming model that I really think, you know, really cuts out a lot of this horrible of XML we have to write, you know, anytime we want to, like, just, you know, do something. So I think that's a massive step forward. Now, what I'm going to do, right, I'm going to start out, like, and I'm going to, you know, go back to my, you know, J2EE developer days, right? And, I've read all my books about J2EE patterns, right? And all that horrible, crazy, nuts stuff. And I'm going to, you know, apply my, you know, J2EE patterns knowledge, in the broadest sense of the word knowledge, in a Java EE5 environment and see where that gets me, right? And so I'm going to try to, like, build a really simple application. It's got some, like, you know, document table, right? And, I don't know, it's pretty straightforward. Title, summary, whatever. And obviously to represent this data, we got some table, some data in it. We represent this in the space of our Java application. We're going to use an entity bean. That's an entity bean in EJB3. You know, I've, like, cheated a little bit. I didn't write the getters and setters. And the most important part of my application, of course, is the user interface. So I'm going to, like, throw in a couple of JSF pages, right? So I'm being kind of you know, agnostic about whether this is JSP or facelets, but let's assume that we're not masochists and that it's facelets. So what you're seeing here is, like, a fragment of just some XHTML with a namespace, H. All right, and I really don't like how blurry it is, but you know, all I want to say here is that there's this couple of JSF controls, you know, in the H namespace, and the only thing interesting here is these little, you know, hash, the squiggly, curly, hash curly something, little bits, and what they are. Well, the first thing, like, this is a box, a text box, right? And what that green thing, that's a value binding. Right, so what it does, what a value binding does, is it says that this box is bound to an attribute called ID of some component called document editor. And that's like a bidirectional binding. That means that when we first display this page, we pull the value off of the document, this thing called document editor, whatever that is, and that when we submit the form, the value is going to be bound back onto it. Very, very nice, very strong. And then we got a button, right? And it's got a method binding. And that's much the same thing. All it means is that, you know, when I click that button, after you know, all these values have been pushed onto my document, after we processed all the value bindings, then what happens is the get method of document editor gets called. So I find that extremely elegant and a very nice way of writing templates. And we got an edit page, which is all basically the same stuff. I mean, the only new thing here is some validation. Otherwise, it's the same. So, you know, putting my J2EE developer session facade hat on, right? What am I going to think? I'm going to think I've got an entity bean, and I need to, you know, access my data out of the database in a transaction. I'll use a session facade, right? I'll use a stateless session bean. So that's a session bean. That's a stateless session bean in EGB3. It's got, wow, what do we need to be able to do? We need to be able to get documents out of the database, and we need to be able to, you know, update them. All right, the only interesting thing to notice is this merge operation returns a different object to the one you push in. So in Java Persistence API, in EGB3 Persistence, when you push in an object, when you've got an object that's detached and you want to update the database with that value, you push it into merge and you get back a different object. But otherwise, that's pretty straightforward, right? Okay, so now I'm like, okay, so I know how to, so I got this session bean, right? I got my session facade, so now I need my, like, my struts action and action form and this stuff. Well, in JSF, we don't really do things that way. What we have in JSF is the idea of, what's it, a backing bean, something like that, okay? Basically, it's just a Java bean component, which exposes some properties, some attributes to the value bindings on the screen. Okay, so this ID thing is a thing which we saw in the which we referred to in the value binding, and some methods, right? Like, which are the things in the method bindings, right? The get method and the save method. And what's this guy doing? I mean, he just like I mean, really, all he knows how to do is, you know, go off, get the stateless session bean, you know, call the method of the stateless session bean. You know, actually, you can inject this. You don't have to use GND. And then we like return this string value. What's this? Well, this is an outcome, right? This is the thing that triggers a navigation rule that I waved my hands about before. Right, so I mean, this is pretty straightforward. It's a little bit more complex than the other things we've seen. All right, now we need, of course, you know, we need some XML. Wonderful. I mean, all this does, right, all this really does is it says that last class back there, this class, is the thing that we mean that we're talking about when we say document editor in our expression language. Okay, it's just one thing more than that. The other thing it says is that it's a session scope component. So what do we mean by that? Well, the thing is that this is stateful, right? In this method here, I take the document. And I don't, you know, if I was using struts or something like that, I'd push it into the HTTP session, right? And in JSF, I don't do that. I actually save it away in an instance variable. And when I come back, so I've displayed the screen, then when I come back to go and update the document, it's there available for me already in the component, right? So it's saved away there for me. So if I want this component to be able to remember this state across two requests, then I need to say it's a session scope component. That's the only way to do it in JSF. And then I got some navigation rules, right? Whatever. I mean, you can see it's like coming from here. This is my outcome. I go somewhere else. All right. How does this compare to J2EE? First of all, the code is much simpler, obviously. There's a lot less noise. There's fewer artifacts. And paradoxically, it's also a lot more powerful, right? The constructs we have, EGB3 is a far, far more powerful component model than EGB2.x was. You have things like interceptors, which can, you know, essentially solve all the problems which you might think you need AOP for, and a very powerful persistence engine. JSF is also extremely extensible. Finally, one of the nice things about this stuff is that all the Java components I wrote up there are very easily unit testable. Now, look, unit testing, I mean, I don't find it to be a very useful thing. You know, generally, I like to write the kind of automated test that when my test fails, that tells me my application's broken and it's failing to satisfy the business rules, and not that all I've done is refactored my code. So I'm a much bigger fan of actually testing meaningful, you know, testing the component inside the context of the container and testing its interactions with other components. I never, you know, kind of bugs I make are never bugs that you can pick up in a unit test, right? They're to do with interactions between different components. So we'll see, you know, in a second. The only reason I say that in a second, I'll mention, you know, what we're doing to make integration testing easier. So what sucks? First of all, that managed bean guy. Oh, this is where I really wish I had the clicker so I don't have to run back and forth across the stage. So this if I look at this guy, right, and I try to understand what he's telling me, right? If I look at this guy and he doesn't tell me anything I didn't already know from all the other components in the system, right? He's just noise, he's just glue, he's just pushing stuff back and forth, right? He's not actually doing anything interesting in terms of the business problem we're trying to solve. He doesn't model anything about the business problem, right? And that might be kind of okay, except he's more lines of code than any of the other individual components in the system. So people say, oh, well, yes, but, you know, his value is that he layers the application and, you know, we need a layered application so that it's great for people who program in PowerPoint, right? They can, you know, show their PowerPoint slides with all their layers and, you know, it looks really impressive, but like they've actually done some work rather than just screwing around in PowerPoint for the past 3 months. You know, that'd be, you know, I mean, so I'm like, okay, so what is the value of this layering, right? That'd be really useful if, like, dynamically at runtime I needed to swap out my business logic layer and replace it with a totally different implementation of my business logic. Which, of course, nobody in this room has ever had to do. So the point here is not that, you know, layering is never a good thing. If I'm producing an application that needs to run in an SOA environment and the components need to be bound to both user interfaces and to the ESB, then there's, you know, of course we need to think about layering. We need to think about the contracts within our loosely coupled application. But if I'm writing an application like that, you know, needs to do something for the user tomorrow, this is like completely nuts. And the point here is that the application, the Java EE platform, shouldn't be forcing this kind of layering on you. You should do that yourself the way you like to do it. My second problem is that this code's just break. I mean, I'm like this ADD guy, right? Like, I can't concentrate on anything for more than about 2 minutes and 30 seconds, all right? So if ever I'm using anything, if I'm using our document editing application, I'm editing, like, five different documents at the same time, right? But this stuff, like we just wrote, if I, like, pull up this document here in my other tab, and I try to edit, and then I go back to here, and I press, like, I'm going to hammer the document in the other way because I'm keeping state in the session scope, right? So any time we put something in the session, shit breaks. So you're like, well, yeah, dickhead, it's because you've got a bug in your code. And yeah, I've got a bug in my code. But this bug is endemic in web applications, right? There are very, very few web applications I've ever used which don't break, right, when you try to, you know, work in multiple windows. And to fix the bug is difficult, right? Related to that, you know, it's kind of arguably it's a kind of a memory leak, right? The state sits there in the session, like on a completely undefined length of time, right? Until the user logs out, right? And I'm not concerned necessarily about the performance implication of that. What I'm concerned about is that in much more complex apps, this is a source of bugs, because state from this one user interaction can leak into another user interaction. That's the kind of bug we don't detect at development time. It's the kind of bug, because of development time, we're developing on this user interaction, and we test this, then we run our unit test, right? And we don't pick up on that kind of stuff. What happens where two goes and does this, and then another goes off and does this, right? We don't pick up on that kind of stuff. So we find out about that at UAT testing or in production, where it's much more expensive to find bugs. One's a bit more subtle, right? Flow is weakly defined. What do I mean by that, right? What I mean is that if I'm working with some BAs, right, the output of the analysis phase, the thing I get given as a developer, very often, especially if the BAs are any good, very often is like diagrams of the page flow, the interaction with the user when this user's doing something. Or even better, like some kind of diagram of the collaboration between multiple users who are working together to accomplish some business process. And then let's go back to our code and see where we can actually find that information. How do you piece together the flow of this user interaction of the, you know, load then edit document user interaction? Well, you have to look at the pages to find what the method bindings are. You have to look at the code to find what the outcomes are, and you have to look at the navigation rules. So we've kind of splattered, munged this concern of flow over the entire overall components in the system. And yet, as a maintenance programmer, that's a key thing. Like, I want to see how do these things fit together to accomplish the problem, to solve the whole problem, right? And it becomes even worse once you start looking at the long-running business processes where there's really no way to tell. I have to go off and start looking at the database and start looking at these little status flags and then looking at how my code updates these status flags, and it's basically a clusterfuck. And the last thing I like is more prosaic, and that's there's all this XML crap that shouldn't be there. So I'm going to take a little quick tangential rant. You know, just because, and now, you know, I've kind of been hammering on this for about, like, six months to a year, and pretty soon I don't think I'll need to rant about it, but the trouble is that, you know, everybody's been sitting around in a circle and telling each other the same thing for so long that it's going to, without ever actually trying it out, that it's going to take me, you know, a lot of saying the same thing over and over again to wind it back, all right? So there's this ancient canard that originates, I believe, with IBM. My favorite people in this whole widest world. And this is the claim that stateful session beans are necessarily unscalable. Okay? So let's think about, let's go back in history and actually discover and do some research and discover why this claim was ever made. The document goes something along the lines of, if I have a requirement in my application for transparent failover. Transparent failover means that when something bad happens, the user doesn't even have to log in again, right? They don't notice when things are removed from the cluster. Okay. So let's suppose it's a different thing to continuous availability. It's a much, much more expensive thing to have a requirement to have than continuous availability. Let's suppose we have that requirement. Then, the only way I can achieve that, if I use a conversational state, if I use a stateful session bean, is by replicating the state of that stateful session bean to all other nodes that I could possibly fail over to. Actually, originally, I think if we look back in history, the reason was that WebSphere, 3.x or whatever, used to write stateful session bean state to the database at the end of every request. But let's leave that aside, okay? Let's not be limited by the ridiculous state of our competitors' products and actually, look at the real reasonable argument for this stuff. So the argument goes that I'm going to have to do the state replication. The argument is that state replication is an expensive thing to do. I think some people assume that actually it means that I have to replicate across the whole cluster. No, this is not the case. There are such things as buddy replication and stuff like that, okay? But I agree. Replicating state between nodes is a somewhat expensive thing to do, obviously. Anytime I need to do things that involve network traffic, that's expensive. Duh. So if we stop thinking now, we would have to conclude that, yes, stateful session beans are unscalable. But my application has state. How am I going to go back to the user and tell them, oh, no, you're not allowed to look at the document before you update it. You have to just actually retype out the whole document and save it. You're allowed to actually, read the document and then save it. So in our, let's switch our mode to, let's not stop thinking now, and let's start thinking about what we would have to do instead. So there's essentially three possibilities. The first solution is keep all the state in the database, the solution much beloved by the, PHP and Perl communities. And of course, this is great if you try to do this and you try to scale your application, and we've all been through this, all right? what we discover is that the application doesn't scale at all, because what I'm doing is on every request, I write my state to the database, and I re-retrieve it, so I'm sitting there with all these requests to and from the database on every request. Kills my latency, right? Databases are not very good at, and not only, it's not only the least scalable tier of the application, the database, but databases are also not very good at batching up fetching of state, right? So I kill my latency, I kill my scalability because I got this, I'm putting all my load on this single central point. So what happens? Nobody thinks, oh, my problem is that I'm, is my so-called stateless architecture. What they do is they go, oh, I have a data access problem. So blame Hibernate. So what they do is they introduce this second level cache. Guess what? My application's now stateful. But it's worse than that, right? Because not only, like if I'm talking about conversational state, I can do replication across, two nodes, three nodes. For a second level cache, I have to do replication across the whole cluster. And it's even fucking worse than that, right? The more you guys, kind of sit there and stare like this, the worse I'm going to cuss and swear. So it's even worse than that, because a second level cache has to be kept transactionally consistent with the database in a pessimistic way. So what I originally started out with is conversational state. It can be replicated across a couple of nodes and can be kept transactionally consistent with optimistic semantics. So what have I done? By trying to be stateless, I've gone back to a stateful architecture, but one that's much worse, much less scalable. I've gone for a much less scalable construct than the one I started out with. Okay, solution two is put everything in the HTTP session. All right, and of course this is totally bogus, because a HTTP session is in no way different in terms of scalability than a stateful session being, all right? It's the same construct. There's no difference. Except that one of them's broken. Guess which one? Can anybody guess which one's broken? Come on. Who thinks HTTP session? Who thinks HTTP session? Oh, come on, guys. One person. So, the servlet spec does not, if I put immutable, I've got some state, I'm going to have it in a Java bean, right? If I'm going to keep this state in a HTTP session, right? Probably later on, I'm going to want to mutate its state by calling some setter method. So I've got this thing sitting in a HTTP session, I call this setter method. What do you think the spec says is meant to happen when you do that? Nothing. What you have to do is go back and call set attribute. Again. It's kind of ridiculous. But do you think anybody remembers to do that ever? Like, let me, as a result of my extremely scientific, speculation over the space of, several talks, I've come up with a totally out of my ass number of like 20% of the time you will remember to actually call set attribute when you keep a Java bean in the HTTP session and you change it and you mutate it. Maybe if you really concentrate on this all the time, you could raise that up as far as like 40% of the time you would remember. Okay, so you're like, that's okay. We'll like test for that. But how are you going to test for that bug? Unit tests? No. Integration tests on a single machine? No. Stress and volume testing? Are you serious? We don't test for correctness in stress and volume testing. The only time you are ever going to find out that you're not replicating your state properly, your only time you're ever going to find out about this bug is in production when something bad happens and you actually fail over. And instead of forcing the user to go and log in again, what happens is that we fail over and the user gets this totally broken munch together of up-to-date state and non-up-to-date state. So we would have been better off not having this whole transparent failover thing in the first place, because we have no way to actually test that it actually works if we use the HTTP session. Like the second problem here is that, you know, what happens in practice is that people want to do stuff with this state in a transactional method. So what they have is they have all their beautiful, you know, session facade or you know, spring objects and stuff. So what they do is they come along and they pull their Java bean out of the HTTP session. They go and push it into this transactional method because they want to access the database in a transaction. Then they return back. They forget to call set attribute and they return, right? What we do is we spend most of our time writing code which pushes Java beans around our system instead of doing the natural thing. I know that sounds like, you know, so retro and, you know, but like how about we do this object-oriented thing of like putting the method on the object with the state? I know that sounds heretical. And you know what that's called? That's called a stateful session bean, and it's not broken. All right. So it was a very long version of that rant. Okay, so I need to zoom through. So what does JBoss Seam do? All right, so Seam's goal is to unify the two component models we've talked about, the EJB3 component model and the JSF managed bean model, and to integrate a number of other interesting technologies, primarily process management, okay, essentially BPM technology, which is currently relegated to the extremely ghetto kind of section of the community. We want to deprecate this so-called stateless architecture, which, as we've seen, is not stateless at all. And we want to, you know, make sure that all this technology is highly integration testable. All right. The way we're going to do this is we're going to do this by introducing a contextual component model. So most of the problems that I just ranted about for like probably 20 minutes relate, you know, somehow to state management. You know, the problem here is that the context defined by the servlet spec are not meaningful in terms of what the user is trying to do with the application. All right? EJB itself has no context at all, so it has no state management, right? It has this wonderful construct called a stateful session bean for holding conversational state, but it doesn't define a life cycle for that. A stateful session bean lasts until you call the remove method, which is another thing you always forget to do. So what we need a richer context model. And we need to, you know, well, whatever, I already said that. So what it makes sense to think about doing is binding EJB components, stateful session beans, stateless session beans, entity beans, directly to our view. I finally get back to showing some code. All right, so this is our very first Seam component. Can you guys see that properly? It's kind of blurry. So basically, what is this? So what I've done is I've munged together my EJB, my stateless session bean, into my JSF managed bean. My JSF managed bean had state, right? So this is going to need to be a stateful session bean. Hence the reason for like the 10-minute long rant about why stateful session beans don't suck. And so I got a stateful session bean. And it's got these action listener methods. Now these action listener methods can just access the database directly. Hooray! And it's got these three funny pink girly annotations here, right? So what's name? All name does what the managed B, what the XML declaration did back in J. It says document editor refers to this thing, right? When we're talking about document editor in OEL, we're talking about this thing. The begin and end, what do? Well, they define the beginning and end of this logical scope, right? This scope of the user doing something. What begin does is it starts a conversation, right? And then the state, state is implicitly associated with this conversation for the flow of the lifetime of the user interaction. Namely, the state of this component, and that state is cleaned up when we hit an end annotation, or when it times out. There's a little mini session timeout. This isn't just about conversations, right? There's a whole one of the things that Seam does is have a very uniform model of context, right? And we have a whole hierarchy of context there. Let's have a look at a demo. I'm bored of talking now. Actually, I never get bored of that. So, this is the Seam booking demo. And probably some people have already seen it. So, Let's say I want to stay in Atlanta. I don't know why I'm staying in Atlanta. I live there now. So, but let's say, well, I go off and try to book myself into the DoubleTree. I'm like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And, you know, then I'm like, change my mind. I'm like, hey, let's stay at the Ritz-Carlton. Oh, yeah. And then I realize that that's kind of stupid, and I switch back here, right? And now, say I press confirm. In almost every web application I've ever used, if I press confirm now, I would book myself in at the Ritz-Carlton for like $450 a night. But here, it remembered that I was on the DoubleTree, right? Even though that was the last thing I was doing over there. So what it does is it knows transparently how to associate this state associated with the user interaction with this tab in this particular browser window. Let me show you something else. Back buttoning works fine. Right? But let's say I confirm and I back button. And I double confirm. No conversation. Recognizes that the conversation's ended. There's a whole bunch of problems like this. Refresh button management. This is a message, and it's been carried across a redirect. Like if I press a refresh button, like it doesn't resubmit the form or anything like that because it knows how to propagate messages across browser redirects. There's a whole set of problems which affect web applications like multi-window browsing, you know, redirect after, refresh buttons, back buttons and stuff like this, which actually just basically go away once you have the well-defined conversational model. I could spend longer playing with that. There's other things you can do, like you can, see this, when I start doing stuff here, actually can get a list of all my conversations, and so I can actually switch between conversations, you know, within the same browser window. So I can actually get multitasking, running inside the same window. So I haven't talked about flow at all. So there's two kind of flows I'm interested in. I'm interested in flow of a user interaction, and I'm interested in flow of a collaboration, of a business process. So the first one is page flow. There's two models here, right? The first one you can use is the totally stateless model, right? We don't keep any state on the server side that affects the flow of the conversation, the flow of the navigation. This, as much as possible, is what we should aim for, right? As much as possible, we shouldn't constrain our users into a particular path through the application. As it is good, and this should be the most common way in most applications. But inevitably, we find some places in our application where we actually need to guide the user along a well-defined path through the application. And for this one, we have a ability to define a page flow in terms of a graphical definition. So this is just a screenshot of the graphical editor for JBPM page flow definitions, which I don't know, I can show you if you want. Maybe you care. I don't know. What's that? Where are we? Example. DVD store or something like that. So, this is just... this is an Eclipse plugin. That lets you, edit all this stuff dynamically. Yeah. Which is kind of nice, right? So that's all I'm showing there. So this is, the point of this stuff is that this is a representation that the BAs or the users can understand. Right? This gives you a way of communicating how the application works, how the application flows in a language they can understand. So the XML version of this language, looks kind of something like that, and of course, like all XML, looks scary until you actually get to know it, at which point it's actually very non-scary. And the thing I want to call out here is basically, is basically the change we make is that instead of having our outcomes in our code and our method bindings in our pages, we move our method bindings into the page flow document, and we have these well-defined transitions. And we end up with a very clean separation of concerns, right? If we look at this component, it has a bunch of methods which are basically just business logic, all right? There's no concern of flow. There's no concern of the flow of the application in this. It has very, we no longer have these methods which return a string valued outcome. We just have a void method get, which does the business logic. So that's kind of nice. I'm not sure if I really need to do this, but let's just show one that, to prove that it actually works. So DVD store. So excuse me, there should be pictures there, but I have no internet connection. So in the DVD store demo, you can see there's a very simple page flow here. We need to actually make that more interesting. It's not very interesting anymore. Used to be a little bit better. We need to fix that. Anyway, so you can see how nice things about this is it shows the interaction between state held in the session context, state held in a conversation context with a page flow, and at the end of purchasing an order, we create a business process, which is what I'm going to talk about. It's the second kind of flow that I'm going to talk about. If you have a look at that, if you have a look at the code for that demo, I think you'd be very interested in how simple it is. So what's a business process? A business process is different from a conversation because it's long running. A business process can last for months or years. Right? So it has to survive multiple upgrades of the system even. It actually results in some very interesting things like the whole goal of using BPM is to enable, business process reengineering, business process optimization, which means that, if you're changing your business processes all the time, which is what you want to be able to do, you actually have a problem because you have old business processes which started months ago, which can't really just suddenly flip over to executing the new process because at this point, because there's no well-defined mapping between the old process and the new process. So you actually need to be able to keep the old process instances executing the old definition of the business process while the new process instances are executing the new ones. It's a long way of saying the fact that it's long-running makes a big, big difference to what it is, right? It's not only persistent, but it also needs to be versioned, right? And it's a collaboration between multiple users, right? You have page flow as an interaction with one user. So we sat down there one day, Java Polis, and Tom and I tried to figure out, okay, how does conversation, this idea of conversation that we were coming with out of the Hibernate community, how does this idea of conversation relate to a business process? And what we decided is that a conversation that's significant in terms of the overarching business process is actually maps directly to a thing called a task in BPM. So what we're saying here is that some conversations are a special kind of conversation which has significance in terms of the overarching business process, and which is a task, and we demarcate them not using begin and end, but by begin task and end task. And work done in the scope of a task has access not only to that task conversation context and state associated with the conversation context, but also state associated with the overarching business process. So there's this other scope called business process scope. So how do we do this stuff? So when I press confirm and created an order, what happened was some code something like this, which you can't see very well because of the bad colors. Basically, we hit a method like this. It's just annotated create process, definition equals that. And I can initialize some state into the process scope. So that's basically, very easy, right? Then I have a process definition, which defines what I got here is some kind of a review cycle for documents, right? I can approve or reject them. Of course, I wouldn't really use BPM for something, you know, so simple. So the XML representation of that has, you know, basically, you know, very similar thing, very similar language than we saw with, when we were talking about page flow. So we have the same kind of language for modeling both of these kinds of orchestration, both of these kinds of process definition. So what we have here is just a single task node where we say we have a task that gets assigned to some user and we can add all kinds of transition actions and stuff like that. Look what we're doing here, right? These EL expressions that I started talking about in the context of JSF and started talking about in the context of actions that happen on button clicks, now they're happening on the basis, now they're used to express events that occur relating to this overarching business process concept. So there's this key value in, core value in Scene called one kind of stuff, right? Basically, the idea that everything is a Scene component, right? Everything, all problems can be solved by evaluating ELs over a set of context, over a set of Scene components in stateful context. I'm never anymore writing, I don't write a JBPM assignment object. I don't write, like, action objects anymore. I don't write, you know, all I do is I write these POJOs, tell this, you know, say what contexts are associated with, and then all my technical concerns can be bound onto those components using an EL. This results in a very, very elegant way of decomposing the system in a very, very loosely coupled set of components. So the code to actually perform the task is, again, really easy. Right? It's just a Scene component. Begin task, end task. Right? That was bound into the thing by something. So the value we can provide here we're executing order process one here. So I've got this process definition for processing orders, which is basically just one task to be done. So I can assign this order to myself. Guys, I didn't write any Java code or anything like that for this page, right? For these task lists, for this task assignment, stuff like that. This is all stuff that can be provided by the infrastructure. Once you have these well-defined constructs as first-class constructs in the infrastructure, there's a lot of things you can do in terms of providing user interface support for these things, right? Once the framework understands that what I have here is a conversation, what I have here is a business process, there's a lot of things that can be provided for free. So all this task assignment and task list screens, all this stuff, I didn't write any code for. Okay, now I'm writing my own. Now I'm in my own code. And ship the order. What I can do, I can switch off to a different order process and if I go back in, and, you know, you say, well, let's not bother about that this today. So I don't know exactly what I want you to get out of that stuff today. What I want to kind of get across is the idea that once you have, you know, once you really have a nice constructs for modeling flow, for defining flow, not only does it make the system more understandable, and especially, you know, not only does it help you communicate with business analysts, but also there's a lot of things that the framework can provide you with that you no longer have to write for yourself. So everybody does a lot of heavy breathing on this subject of dependency injection. Okay, whatever. So, I mean, to me, it's whatever. But, you know, obviously if I'm trying to push some kind of, you know, component model onto you guys, right, you know, everybody wants to know, so what's your, you know, so I have to have some story here. So what happens is as soon as I come and look at, okay, dependency injection, for my stateful component model, And this governor is like completely broken, basically. Right? I'm no longer, when I'm thinking about these contextual components, I don't think in terms of dependency being the problem. Right? It's no longer a problem of, I'm a fool, I need a bar, any old bar will do, just give me one. It doesn't work like that anymore. Because what I think in terms of is contextual variables, they're stateful objects, they have a value, their value changes over time. Not every bar is the same as each other. Right? I'm interested in which bar, right? And which bar at which point of time. I have problems like components in a wider scope, like a business process context, need to be able to use components in a narrower scope, like the request scope. So dependency injection was completely, you know, defined into, you know, people, the problem people were thinking about was, they were thinking about this stateless session bin architecture, right? They were thinking stateless. And in fact, so you could refactor this whole dependency injection architecture as basically COBOL with polymorphism. Because I don't have any objects there, right? There are no spring objects, okay? It's not an object. If it doesn't have state, it's not an object. Right? It's services. Okay, that's okay at a coarse grain. That's okay at a coarse grain in my loosely coupled application attached to my ESB, right? It's not okay. It's not the right way to model the internals of an application. So for stateful components, we need something, you know, slightly more general called bijection, right, which enables us to, you know, do things like manipulate the value of a contextual variable. And also needs to be much more dynamic. So don't think about this in terms of dependency. Think about this in terms of aliasing a contextual variable into the namespace of my component, i.e. aliasing a contextual variable to an instance variable. So what we're saying here is that Java lacks first-class primitive constructs for saying this is a session scope variable, this is a business process scope variable, this is a request scope variable. I can't write, you know, private session, well, it wouldn't be private, it would be session foo-foo, right? I can't write that down. All I can do, all I have, the only construct I have is an instance variable. So what I can do is say this instance variable is a proxy, right? It's an alias for that, you know, session variable or that conversation variable. And it looks really simple. It's right. I mean, I can make it sound all complex by waving my hands a lot, but it's the simplest idea on earth, right? Like at in, at out. So what have I got, right? I've got, you know, I'm trying to update the password of my user, right? User is one of the very few components which makes sense to be session scope, right? Representing the logged in user. So I want to change this guy's password, right? I need to merge it, and I need to pop out a different user with an updated version number and stuff like that, right? The problem with stateful components, again, they have an identity, they have value, right? So I need to get the current value of the current user object, and then I need to somehow, at the end of this, I need to make all the other components in the system see the new updated value, right? So what happens is at invocation time, when I come in and invoke this method, I inject the current user out from the session variable into that instance variable and do my work, accept my new object back into that instance variable. Then at the end of the invocation, I outject the value out of that instance variable back in the session variable. Real, real straightforward, okay? Real easy thing to understand. But what it lets us do is it lets us, you know, have this kind of very simple construct for representing a contextual variable, right? Which is something we didn't have before. How much time have I got? 20 minutes? Okay. So I've got one more slide. Questions? So a lot of this stuff, a lot of, you know, I mean, one of the funny things about conversations is that pretty soon, once you start thinking about them, you can't ever think about anything else, Right, so this stuff about conversations came out very much from thinking about optimistic transactions, what we used to call application transactions back in Hibernate days, right? You know, came from us thinking about optimistic transactions, about dealing with problems like lazy loading and dirty checking and all these kind of problems. And the funny thing was, you know, once we started thinking about that, we discovered it was an essential piece of understanding how a web application can work. It was an essential piece of understanding, you know, how to integrate business process management into the framework. Even when you're not looking for something, the other day, you know, like a couple of weeks ago, I was trying to figure out how to integrate Joules into all this stuff, and I start and like, you know, one of the first things that Michael Neal said to me, he was like, oh yeah, no, working memory is a conversation scope. I'm like, oh really? He's like, yeah. He's like, everyone's using rules wrong at the moment because, you know, they do it all stateless. He's like, that's not the way it's meant to be. Everybody's doing it wrong. And I'm like, it's just like persistence, right? Everyone's doing it wrong. So, what is that? Like, I am fed up to here with hearing, I went and got some data out of the database, and then I came back, and then I navigated my association, and I got a lazy initialization exception, and why can't stupid Hibernate just go off to the database and get the data for me? Alright, let's think about what would happen then. This thing called, I have an object graph. Hibernate is not a system for getting objects in and out of the database. It's a system for getting object graphs in and out of the database. All right. Number one, it's not active record, i.e., it's not broken. Okay, it actually works for complex problems. Right, it deals with graphs of objects. So if I've got user and person, a one-to-one association, I pull out user, I stick it in my HTTP session, I come back. I navigate along this association to person. Okay, good. I got a person. Okay, because Hibernate went off and did what everyone wants it to do. It goes off and gets it from the database. And then I navigate back. Do you think I get back to the same object? No. How would Hibernate know that that's where we're coming from? There is no way in a stateless architecture to deal with graphs of persistent objects well. But if you go off and look at the Hibernate documentation since pre-1.0, there's a little section which talks about persistence context management. It used to be called session management, right? We thought of a better name since then. About persistence context management, right? And it talks about this thing called, you know, a long session, right? Or an extended persistence context. And the idea here is that, why did Hibernate blow up when you came back? It's because I didn't have a session. I didn't have a persistence context. It's not Hibernate was stupid. It's you closed the set. You closed the persistence context. What did you do that for? Right? It's not me. It's you. What did you do that for? Like, you broke it, not me. And you ask people, they're like, oh, well, it's because I'm using Spring to manage. And there you go. It's because you're using Spring, which is a pure, stateless, request-oriented architecture. And hence, fundamentally broken when dealing, you know, with these kind of things. So I don't want to bash on Spring, right, actually. Spring's no more broken in this respect than stateless session means, or any of the kind of broken architectures we've been using for the past 10 years, right? 5 years, let's say. So, once we introduce conversations as a first-class construct, we can have the idea of a conversation scope persistence context. And guess what? All these lazy initialization exceptions, non-unique object exceptions, you know, lack of dirty checking, all these kind of problems go away. Right? Because we have state. We're able to remember things between requests. Guys, it's not too much to ask, remembering things between requests, right? It's pretty basic. All right, I would talk about Ajax, but let's have questions. Obviously, you know, any web framework today needs very strong support for Ajax. The first part of our story in SIEM is the ability to be able to directly call SIEM components, EGBs, directly from a client-side JavaScript. So you can say, just get me the document editor and call its methods and get the result in a callback function, stuff like that. You can subscribe to JMS topics from client-side JavaScript and have the results pushed to you, pushed to a callback method via, comment or polling, and stuff like that. There's a bunch of other interesting technologies thrown in, things like drills and stuff like that. But let's do questions. Thanks for listening to me rant for way too long. Come on. Somebody ask something? Yes? So conversations are scoped to a particular user, right? So they're scoped within a session. Okay? So whereas a business process is shared between multiple users, a conversation is always scoped to a single user. I mean, by the way, I mean, the implementation under the covers with conversations, I skipped over this slide because I felt I was going too long. The implementation of conversations is just an ID that travels back and forth. Well, there's two ways. There's a switch. The way most people would do it is just an ID that travels back and forth between the server and the client, right? And it's just a key into some state in the HTTP session, right? It's nothing special. The difference is that what we're encouraging is to put stateful session beans in the HTTP session so that you solve a lot of those problems I kind of, ranted on about. The other way you can do it, there is another way to do conversational state management, which is to actually serialize the whole state back and forth between the client and the server all the time. And in fact, some of the other people I've seen around actually advocate this approach, and it has some advantages, but I just whenever I actually tested this out, it just seems to make the application slower, right? Generally, it just comes back to that fact that it just doesn't make sense to serialize stuff over a wire when you can just keep it in memory there and passivate it, right? If you start running out of memory, then you passivate, right? Then you serialize onto your local disk, not across the wire. I don't know. Anyway, there's a switch to choose between those things. Yeah.
Does it work?
Yeah, okay. Gavin, can you tell us if this will work in all application servers?
It'll work in... I can't see where... It currently works in JBoss and GlassFish. I imagine it can be made to work in Oracle. Actually, I don't have... I didn't yet get time to make the deploy targets for the examples on GlassFish, but hopefully Roger at Sun is going to do that. It should also work on Oracle, I imagine, but nobody's tested it. In terms of getting it to work on, like WebSphere, WebLogic, I imagine VEA will probably have a Java E5 implementation sometime soon. WebSphere, is a much more backward product. You can run... There's a way you can use SIEM where instead of using the whole EGB3 stateful session beans thing, you can use Hibernate and some Java beans, okay? And if you want to, as a migration path, that's actually a good one if you're stuck on, WebSphere, whatever, and which I don't really know when they're going to support EE5, then that can provide a path into this. I should say that also we're working very closely with Sun and Oracle and Google Ball and Sybase on working some of the key ideas in this stuff into the WebBeans JSR, so JSR 299. We've submitted to get some of this stuff back into the standards because we think it's important to be there. Basically, I want it to work everywhere, but it really makes a difference. If you're stuck on IBM, it's a problem that they don't support EE5. I mean, may well be the least of your problems if you're stuck on IBM, but all the other products are actually good, and it's the market leader. Yep.
Flow requirements and workflow requirements can be fulfilled with
with just one. Yes.
Talking about page flow.
Yes.
And on the other hand, when I talk about processes, I'm talking about the
impact. Oh, with just one language, Paul? I mean, yeah. To me, that's the key thing. Like, I mean, listen. It took me a really long time to get JBP. You know, I always used to listen to Tom talk, and he was so serious and so, you know, cared so much about, and frankly, I never got it, right? Until I actually started using it, and I realized, you know, what's so great about JBPM is that it has this extensible process modeling language, all right? So there's three interesting kinds of orchestration, you know, that we know of today. One is, you know, user interaction, page flow. That's probably the least interesting one, right? The second least interesting one is service orchestration, all right? So things like solutions like BIPL address that one in isolation. And the third one, the most interesting one in my mind, is the collaboration aspect, you know, the ability to be able to, you know, re-engineer and re-optimize your business processes and separate out, you know, all those status fields on our entities, right, into, you know, factor that out, right, is really interesting to me. And what he's built is this, you know, extensible language which can be used for dealing with all these three things, okay? Absolutely. Yeah. No. Yes. I mean, it's perfectly suited for all of those three things. And it's used actively for all of those three things today. You know, we have people building the, you know, this SOA architectures using JBPM for service orchestration, which is something I've never used it for, but they love it. I think it's actually really important technology. And I at some stage, I think in about a year or 2 years, when people have actually used BIPL, there's going to be a very strong movement away from BIPL. At the moment, nobody's actually used it, so they don't realize how horrible it is. Look who made it. So I think, you know, I think now I'm starting to, you know, what we're starting to see now, you know, in you know, other organizations, some of our competitors and stuff, is starting to see people go, you know what, this doesn't really work very well, right? So in a couple of years, I think we'll get to that point of, you know, disillusionment with BIPL, that people start looking for something else, and I hope at that point we can start to push something like JBPM as a, you know, as a standard and stuff, you know. But you know, that's a little ways off yet, unfortunately. I was going to say something else about that. Yeah, the other interesting thing is, like, I especially like what Rife's doing with language level continuations and stuff. A lot of, you know, you can view conversations and even, you know, tasks and stuff like that you can view it in terms as a continuation model. It's a different kind of continuation model to what Rife has. Rife kind of snapshots the state at every request, which I'm concerned about. I don't agree with that way of doing it. I think the correct way to do it is a nested conversation model, but they kind of address the same thing, right? So you can view this stuff as a continuation model and JBPM as a language for defining continuations, right, between continuations. I'm not sure what the end goal is here. I'm not happy with it being XML, so we're exploring kind of, you know, some more DSL kind of approaches. Perhaps the future really is the Rife style of thing, where it's a language level thing. I'm not sure about that. You know, one of the things that makes me unsure, one of the things which makes me a bit doubtful about that is that you don't get to have this. It's not going to work for business process modeling, I don't think, right? It can work for, and it doesn't have this graphical representation. Maybe you can overcome those problems. I'm not sure, but anyway, I don't know what I'm doing now. Yeah. Here we go. Come on, seriously, I didn't say anything. I didn't say anything totally nuts and bullshit in that entire hour and a half of ranting. Come on, call me on it. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
One more.
One more. Okay.
Time for one more.
I just want to clarify one of the things you mentioned on session attribute replication for HTTP sessions.
About
you said you had to call a set attribute to make sure the state is replicated.
Yes.
But the servlet specification doesn't say anything explicit about that.
Well, okay. So let me rewind that a little bit. On some servers, namely JBoss and anybody who uses Tangasol Coherence for their section replication, it actually works. Right? In JBoss, session replication is built on top of JBoss cache, and so we do actually do replication correctly, right, without the possibility for that bug. But on other servers, that actually doesn't work, right?
To make sure.
So it's implementation specific, yeah. Right? I mean, and you could argue that that's not a big deal, and that on its own is not enough reason to switch to using stateful session beans, right? My point is that from a technical clustering perspective, that the HTTP session approach, which is essentially what everyone does now, is not better than stateful session beans and may be worse, but that from actual programming model point of view, it's much worse, right? The argument's maybe a little bit more subtle than what I'm making it out to be. The argument is that it's okay to go for the thing we would want to do from a programming model perspective because it's not worse than it's not worse from a technical scalability perspective, right? From a robustness perspective as well. Clearly I think it's deeply problematic that how some servers implement that. I mean, it's extremely problematic and it's extremely bugged. It's deeply wrong. You know, arguably we could fix the servlet spec to say, hey, servers shouldn't do that, right? But we'd still be left with the fact that it's an extremely, that this construct is a very weak construct. It's this hash mappy abomination thing that just has no place in terms of, it just doesn't make sense as a construct, right? You know, when we have stateful session beans, we can define individually their passivation policies, their transaction policies, all this stuff, right? Thank you very much. I appreciate it.